upon taking over.
Which one?
Well, I guess after Abiel. He asked the manal of the Satmar yeshivas how he runs the yeshiva. So the manal, slightly insulted, to this new rebbe, said, "Oh Rebbe, don't worry, I got the keys to chinuch from your father." So the new rebbe responded, "You may have gotten the keys to chinuch from my father, but since he gave them to you, they changed the locks." So I thought a good topic to talk about would be what principles in chinuch that we may have heard about many years ago, but are no longer prevalent and outdated. Yeah,
they're outdated.
Outdated, yeah. Things that are outdated that don't work. Huh?
Hidden.
What?
Hidden students.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't asking, it wasn't a test. I was trying to present the topic.
Oh, sorry.
I'm a genius.
And,
that's the test.
You passed.
Definitely passed.
That's the number one answer.
Name a few.
I got to know Rabbi Foreman accidentally. They spelled it with an H?
Hanukkah with an H, Masiva with F. But the Hanukkah could be from Magram M, Masiva, it was not.
Right, that's what we were Mechavan to that.
And they did Masiva.
Okay. So I got to know Rabbi Foreman accidentally. Pass these down, please. I think it was 2001, and I, as the manal, I was 2 years in. I was 3 years in as manal, and I noticed one September that there were 23 students in the school. Now, the school then was 7th grade through 12th grade. There were 23 students who were there the September before that were not there the next September. So, and not kids who graduated. Now, I didn't count kids, 12th graders who left. And with 23 boys. And I went around to all of our key people to, like, is this something we should be concerned about? And they looked at the list, and every single one of them, I don't remember which people I asked anymore, but I remember every one of them said, "Nah, this kid, you know, went to Baltimore, and this kid went here, and this family moved here, and this kid's crazy, and that kid was who knows what." They went, they had a terrace for everyone except for one or two. One or two, okay. Every school was one, you know, one or two. So I said, "Gee, wow, everyone has the same response." So I was getting more nervous because there's an old principle called the locus of control. The locus of control is when things happen, where's the control? The locus means the center, the focus, the control. The thing that's creating the result is coming from what? So anytime the locus of control is on everything outside and no one's pointing inside, like nobody was ready to say that maybe we're doing something wrong, that creating 23 kids from leaving. Like why would you move to Baltimore? Even a family that moved to Baltimore, why would you move if you have the, if you're in Gan Eden over here? Like why would you move? I would move. So that concerned me. That was concern number one. Then on one day, I had the following incidents took place. That, you know, it wasn't September. September, October, I don't remember, it was before the Yom Tov or after, but it was, a kid came over to me at around 11 o'clock. I remember who it was, but it's not necessary for the story, but that's how vivid it is. And he asked me if he, permission on a Sunday, if he could leave at 11:30 because there's a family get-together. So I told him that, all right, 11:30 on a Sunday, his family get-together, like, I wasn't born yesterday. So I said, listen, you're going to a Dolphin game, we're the Shiva's Machbid, we don't do tailgating and Dolphin games, I'm really sorry. So the kid said, but we have great seats. So I said, no, I'm really, really sorry. And it happened to be that Sunday we had arranged for a prestigious speaker to come and spoke to the high school that day. It could be in the back of my mind that I didn't want him to miss it. Okay, that was one item. Next item was that we had someone was giving a class in Ivrit. It was a 10th grade Ivrit class. That was the precursor to the, for those of the Miami guys here who are familiar with the Sunday enrichment classes. So we hadn't yet started the enrichment classes, but we had a Sunday class for 10th graders in Hebrew. We had to pick one grade because we had someone who could teach the class. He was able to give us, I think, 45 minutes a week. So we had to pick one grade. So which grade would you pick? The 9th graders, you know, we figured we're too immature. And the 11th graders were too mature. So we picked the 10th grade. We're just like, hey, the 11th graders are halfway out. Let them learn Hebrew in 10th grade, and then maybe they'll have some nachas from it while they're still in school. So they'll learn something. So we had the 10th grade. And two boys took their handout that the teacher gave them, and they ripped it up and threw it in the garbage and walked out of class. Okay, that was number two. Let's see if I can remember. There were four of them. Number three. The boy who I told him couldn't leave, in the middle of that speech by the guest speaker, picked up and walked out. Like, it was in the auditorium. About 10 after 12, he just got up and left. Just left school. Anyways, you know. That was number three. If I remember, if I have it written down somewhere, but there was a fourth item that took place. I don't remember right now what it was. So anyway, all these things happened. It was all on the same day, and it was during that tekufa. It was either right before Yom Tov, right after Yom Tov, because it was, you know, I remember it was like early on in the football season. First of all, had it been like playoff season, I never would have had the audacity to tell a kid no. You know. But so anyway, when I wrote to Rabbi Feuerman, I didn't know Rabbi Feuerman at all. And I called up a few people. I said, okay, I think we have a serious problem. There was something else. Yeah, the fourth thing was that there was, I never saw something like this before, there was terrible graffiti written in the bathroom that day that we found. So it all happened on the same day. I think that's what got my attention, that all four things were like reported to me or happened on that same day. So I remember asking a few people, who's the, you know, I was the principal and didn't know who. I don't think there was anyone in the yeshiva that I felt could solve the problems from the core. So I was asking around, who is the most brilliant, sought-after educational consultant out there? I don't care. Money's no object. I had no approval for anything, but we found out that three people told me right before Iman. So it was pre-email. I think the email existed already, but I didn't have any shakas to it. And I faxed him this this letter. And he faxed me back a scathing response, basically saying that the students are acting and responding with disrespect because they are being disrespected, and they will continue to show you disrespect is only a reflection of the disrespect that they are shown. And slowly the student population will dwindle. It will result in fewer students, fewer donations, and ultimately will cause the demise and closing of your school. Regretfully, I'm unable to help you. You are far and too far gone for myself or anyone to be able to help. My sincerest regrets, especially to hear such behavior from a Chafetz Chaim yeshiva, which is so-called Moser Yeshiva. With best wishes, Chaim Foreman. Okay. That's what he responded to me. I'll be glad to show you his facts. That's what he responded. He was very proud of it many years later. That's what he sent me. I was so intrigued by that response because, well, before I say, I want to tell you, want to try and guess why I was so intrigued by it?
Penina.
What?
She's playing
Penina. Oh. Okay, maybe. Okay, it's one terrace.
Why didn't you just take the job?
I wanted to just take the job. Okay, good.
Oh, how did
good.
He know?
How did he know?
How did he know? Oh, they're being disrespected.
Right, how did he know? Okay, good. Anyone else? Okay, I was intrigued by how did he know. Just if I could just fast forward for a second, I didn't know who Rabbi Foreman was at the time. He was just like a name. I knew what he looked like. I had once seen him, but I didn't know who he was. He told me once that a nurse came to draw his blood when he was in the hospital once, and he told his aide, Noel, who you guys must have met, he told his aide, find out from that nurse if she has three younger brothers. She looks to me like she has three younger brothers. So Noel says, Rabbi, how you must know that? He says, ask her. So he goes over to her and says, ma'am, can I ask you a question? It's a little more on the personal side. He goes, okay. He says, the rabbi wants to know if you have three younger brothers. So she looks and she says, yes. I have three siblings and there are three younger brothers. So the reformer told me the story and like very proud of himself that he got it right. He said, do you know who this woman was? I said, no, I never met her before in my life. But he said that he was wearing one of these hospital robes and she had to like move the back of his robe. And for a nurse to move the back of a robe on a male patient, there's some level of, even if they're doing it all the time as a nurse, there's some level of discomfort or hesitation or busha a normal person would have to do it. They'll hesitate, they'll excuse themselves. She was so comfortable doing it, it had to be that she had a lot of shimush with younger brothers, because kids, you don't get that comfort level from your children. It had to be from younger siblings, and it had to be a lot. So it had to be at least three. So that's how he knew she had at least three younger brothers. This is the man I'm talking about. I could tell you 25 stories like this with him. So you asked a good question. Sure. Had I known Rabbi Foreman, I never would have questioned the man. But at the time, I had the same question. That's what intrigued me. You know, and your question was also good. Like, why don't you just take the job and maybe just pulling, playing mind games with me. But what intrigued me was like, what did I tell him? I was looking to, like, figure something out. Like, I didn't tell him anything about myself. How did he know? One time I called him after he was doing a lot of consulting for us at the beginning, and I said, right before him, I did something, you'd be very proud of me. We brought a bunch of boys together. I think we had 8 boys, 2 from every grade. And we had a meeting to discuss, this is also back in like 2003, 2004. And I said, and we had a meeting and we just wanted the boys to talk about how they think we could add more Ruach in the school. I'd like to get their take on it. And when they were in the room, and the honest truth is, it was a pretty disaster meeting because what this boy said, we should have more recess. This guy said we should have 2 gym periods a day instead of 1 gym a day. Why do we have to have school on Sundays? Was it common? One, crazy idea after another. Not what I was looking for, but I was trying to boast to Rabbi Feuerman that we at least got the boys together to ask them what they wanted, what they thought would be good ruach in the school. So when I call Rabbi Feuerman, I feel I at least take some credit for attempting to ask such a question that shows that we're caring about what the students say.
You just like driving their heads like, you know,
I was very proud of him. So I call Rabbi Feuerman. Rabbi Feuerman's response to me was, okay, very nice. As you learn more about the psychology of schools and trying to be more in touch with what your students are holding, you'll be able to have sessions like this that will be much more productive than the one you had. So I said, did some of our students call you? He said, no, I didn't speak to anyone. So how did you know that the session was not productive? I had to really, so to speak, eat crow and like admit that it was disaster. It wouldn't go well, but how did you know that? So he said, there's an old klal that you always play a radio station on WIFM. WIFM, I said, what's that? He said, WIFM stands for what's in it for me. This is a great lesson. That when you would talk to somebody, like playing radio for somebody, you always play it on their station. What's in it for me? The conversation that they're going to want to have. Right? If Feuerman says, what shaychus as a high school kid care about your school ruach? He couldn't care less. That's your problem. You want to make school ruach. He doesn't want school ruach. He wants to go play ball. He wants to have off on Sundays. And he wants to know, why can we have better food? And that's what my session got me. They wanted better food, and they wanted, he was like, when I told him that, he already understood when I said that it was a disaster meeting. Now, in retrospect, I would have told anyone would tell me that they want to have such a meeting, I'll tell him what, it's going to be a disaster. Because the kids weren't interested. The average kid is not interested in your school ruach. You know, you have to ask the question on their radio station. If you want to elicit the responses they're going to have, you have to be much more, specific. There is a way to elicit the answer, but you'd have to really harva on the questions, the wording of the question, so that it's totally geared for WIFM. Okay, David, you want to get the temperature down? Get it right this time.
Rebbe, is Rebbe still doing it? He calls the ninth graders and he's in school and talks to them.
Ask the Kobe to lower the temperature.
Does Rebbe do that in a different way than he used to? Whenever he talks to the ninth graders.
72.
Hey, Alexa. Ask the Kobe to lower the temperature to 72.
Fuck. Again, you're saying, do you want to know if what?
Progress.
Kirby still does that. Nobody talks to the ninth graders a few weeks in the school.
Breakfast. That's what we had.
Yeah, I didn't have it yet. I did it every year except for last year. I didn't do it, but this year I intend to. I just didn't do it yet.
Is that because Kirby still has in?
Yeah, I got no. It's like.
Is it a different type of session?
Huh?
Is it a different type of session than the one?
Yeah. Before? Yeah, totally. I usually go around the room and saying like, you know what I would ask like, what's the. I try to start with something positive. I would say, tell me your what's going easiest for you in high school. And then I ask them if you could change one thing in the school, what would it be?
What's the answer? I remember the answers were like Mishmar. More recess, no Mishmar, easier dress code.
I stopped doing it at the beginning of the year because I was getting the school days too long from everyone, and it's a shinui havest, and it's like their whole getting used to a school day like that. Of course, they're going to say that. Like, no eighth grader wants to even look at a high school schedule. They can't look. They can't deal with it. So I didn't want to do it earlier in the year, too early in the year. Because that's what I get. I wait a little bit longer where the school day is not the focus. Like, you're not going to, a 12th grader, if you ask them, you know, how can we make you, you know, okay, 12th grader is not a good ride either because they have four nights, say, nights of dorm already. They didn't have that. 11th grade, you ask an 11th grader, you know, most of them are not going to say the school day is too long. They're going to come up with other things.
That question works because it's a what's in it for me question?
Yeah, I mean, it could be there's a better way to make it what's in it for me than what thing you change, I off the top of my head. But there are better ways to ask the question, what's in it for me. I had to do this this week. I had to speak to some people, not educators in our school, but I had to ask the question is, you could use one of those towels, just put it in the basket. Okay, the question I asked was, what could I help you get that you currently do not have that would allow you to complete your work for Yeshiva Torah Chaim Torah Semes more effectively and more efficiently? That was the question I asked. It was to an employee. I asked it to a few employees. What could I get you that you currently do not have that would allow you to complete your work for Yeshiva Torah Chaim Torah Semes more effectively and more efficiently? Only one, asked it many, 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 many times to many, many, many people, and believe it or not, only one person said more money. And even the person who said more money only said it as a third answer. So, you know, the money doesn't answer all the problems. You know, so you know, you get that they felt very respected by the question. It was like, wow, you really, you know, I didn't even offer to help them. I just was asking them what they would want. I didn't say, you know, I wouldn't tell them. I didn't say I would do anything for them. So, but you, that's a great part I heard from my foreman. That itself, you know, like, hey, you call lawyers. We paid them, I don't know, paid them a lot of money per hour, like crazy amount of money per hour. Like whatever you think you get to pay a lawyer, you know, per hour. That's what we paid them per hour. And it's just, I mean, you never think like, wow, the advice you can get from a lawyer, like, what would you do otherwise? You have no idea what to do in this situation. You know, so it was amazing. This one was worth, you know, for sure, an hour's worth. The WIFM, people, you'd be surprised. People, you know, you go on an interview, And I remember I did interview Rabbi Levine, I remember, but I had the previous secular studies principal help me interview his successor because he was retiring. So I didn't really do it myself. But Mr. Scharf, the previous English principal, I had to interview myself. I did that in 2000, and I was like a second year principal, and that was pretty scary. You know, to hire an English principal. I'm not an expert in secular studies. The reason why we don't have like one teacher teaching math, science, English, social studies, because there is no human being that could teach that level sophistication in all four disciplines. They don't exist. There isn't anyone who could teach all those disciplines at that level, or very, very few. And it'd be hard to find them. That's why you have a math teacher, an English teacher. So imagine, you know, you get like a gadol, like, you know, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein could teach, you know, Gemara, Halacha. I tell the boys, like, to find a Rebbe who's going to teach you Halacha, and expert in Halacha, Gemara, Bekiyas, Navi, Parsha, you know, the expert at the sophistication of a high school. I don't know how sophisticated it is. There's no English teacher that can teach you all those four subjects. And Torah is so much more vast, so you can imagine the level of scholarship a Rebbe has to have. We don't appreciate how much the Rebbe has to be prepared for to be able to teach a class. They just take it like, oh, yeah, just another, you know, Rebbe, but that takes a lot of years of study. Now, it could be if they would study for 15 years, you know, Gemara, you know, like math and science, English, all sides, I assume you could master all of it. I assume you could. It's not like beyond, that's what's the big deal. But they don't. No one does that. You know, like, how much school are you going to go to? I'm all, you have like, you know, doctors who really harva on their field, and they become the top in their field, but there aren't too many like that. So how do we get into that?
What changed the kind of?
Mr. Scharf, so he told me at the conclusion of the interview, this is the best WIFM. He interviewed for 2 hours, and he was a brilliant man. I hired a man who was 70. I was like 30, and he was 70. And he was really good. And the reason why he took the job, he says, I think you'd be a very good person to work for. So I said, what makes you say that? And he said, because I'm here for an hour and a half, and I did 85% of the talking. He did 85% of the talking. I was asking him questions. He says, he's gone on a lot of interviews and conducted a lot of interviews. You'd be surprised how many people are at an interview. The interviewer does most of the talking. You imagine? It doesn't make any sense. Why would the interviewer do the talking? But they know, they tell them all about the school, and I don't know. The things that you could tell them on like the 10th week of the job, you could tell them simple things, give them a handbook and let them read it, or let them walk around and figure out most of it. So like, getting people to be engaged in what you want to talk about, that is not so pushy. Okay, so, all right, so WIFM, that was over. So, oh yeah, so Mendy's getting us back to the real subject, is which types of things. I want to get back, because that's really where we're at. And with that right foreman's help, we analyzed the school. Here's one vart, that when you see vandalism in a school, children, especially teenagers, do not know how to express rage. Like, kids are angry, they do not know how to express anger. That's a very adult, mature development. And some people never really outgrow it, so they're like hot-tempered and they blow up. Even adults, you see it sometimes, but it's I guess the Bali Musa would call it a balkas, but for the purposes of this, you know, vad, it doesn't really do justice to call it balkas. You know, yeah, guys are oisvorf. It doesn't cut it in a clinical term. I just call this, it's a little bit of a an undeveloped skill of dealing with rage, dealing with anger. You know, a little kid has a temper tantrum. So adult can have a temper tantrum also. What stops an adult from having a temper tantrum? You know, you have a temper tantrum. It's basically the same thing as a little kid. Now, don't go crazy if you've lost it. You know, it could happen. But just to dare that, it's a sophistication, a developed skill to deal with it. Not stop your balkaius. It just means you didn't learn how to deal with that thing perfectly. So, okay. So, get more perfect at it. So, that would be a...
What's my train of thought again? No skill.
How do we get on to anger? Who's paying attention?
Graffiti.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. So the graffiti, when he heard about the graffiti, he told me that kids are angry. Kids are angry when they're disrespected. Only. Yeah, hear that? Kids angry when they're disrespected. People get angry when they're disrespected.
How does he know it's a school?
Because when a kid does vandalism on school property, he's taking his rage out on the school. If he's just angry at some other Joe, he'll go graffiti up his book bag, his book, his jacket, his hat. He's not going to graffiti up the walls of the bathroom. He's doing it against the walls, so he's angry at the school. So that was his raya, that the school was disrespecting him. When a kid tore up the teacher's paper, he's telling the teacher that you disrespect me, I disrespect you. When the kid walked out of the session, he was saying, you know, hasta la vista to your speaker and your school. And then he took umbrage with my comment to the boy who asked for a family outing. He said a vart from, did he quote Yaakov or Shmuel Kamenetsky? I thought that at a Torah Masorah convention, I'm pretty sure it was Reb Shmuel, and a fourth grade Rebbe asked, what should I do I'm a fourth grade Rebbe, and we daven with the boys in the class, and the boy says that he davened already. So Reb Shmuel said, well, if he says he davened already, he davened. So the Rebbe thought that Reb Shmuel didn't totally chop the question, which was understandable on the Rebbe's part. You know, Reb Shmuel didn't explain everything he understood, but Reb Shmuel did understand. So the Rebbe, trying to just make sure it was perfectly clear, says, no, the Reshiva doesn't understand. I know for a fact he didn't daven. It's not like I think he didn't daven. I know for a fact he didn't, that this boy did not daven. But he says he davened. So this, I tell you, when I said over the story to him that he had told me once, he corrected me, so I'm giving the corrected version. Rav Shmuel answered, I don't care. He quoted it exactly like Rav Shmuel said, I don't care. If a boy, this was the klal he took from it. This is a chinuch vort. If you call a kid a liar, this is a bichidish. If you call a kid a liar, you're teaching him to be a shakran. If you tell a kid that if you say so, then I guess that's the truth, then you're teaching him to be a Baal Emes. Even though he's lying, but if you call him on it, you are responsible for him becoming a liar. The fact that he lied is not as big of a hashpa on him becoming a shakran than the Rebbe or adult for challenging him on it. Now, this gets a little bit murky when you're dealing with genevas and stuff like that, and you have to, so to speak, you know, sort of walk a tightrope between calling him a liar and getting the truth. This is quite a challenge, but understand, at least this is a challenge. You need a chacham, you know, you need a chacham, whatever, or a begida, You know, you need a few chachamim out there who know how to walk the tightrope. But you can't call a kid a liar. Now, I can tell you when I was in school, you know, kid, you know, if they thought you did something, you did it. I remember I was in seventh grade, and one of my rebbeim, who I was so close with up until that day, late in the year, okay, came over to my desk during a Gemara test and told me to keep your eyes on your own paper. Said that to me. So, like, of course I put my hand on my butt. I said, my relationship went from this to like... So I remember telling someone, like, maybe could mean my eyes were wandering. So someone asked me, but maybe your eyes were wandering. So how was he supposed to know you weren't cheating? So I said, I'm telling you my version of the story. I really wasn't cheating. But I said, he should have known. He should have known that I wasn't cheating. He should have known. Me? I wasn't cheating. And if I cheated yesterday, I wasn't cheating today. I happened not to be a cheater on tests when I was in seventh grade. You know, I didn't cheat, and I would never cheat in his class, you know, my beloved Rebbe. And, you know, like, wow, he accused me of cheating? Keep your eyes on your own paper. Like, even that, it's like, wow. And, like, oh my gosh, how could he accuse me of that? But I learned from this Varet, from this thing right before him, and it's like, it was much worse than that. When that guy, it was inadvertent that I don't hold a grudge, you know, to this day. I don't. I, you know, eventually got over it, but it did affect me. Because it was weird, because he was really drumming into me to cheat. That's what it was doing. And it's somehow that's what Rav Shmuel said you're doing. So, yeah, the kid says you have to tell the kid, if you say you daven, okay, and you daven. Please, in the future, daven with us in class. You're not to daven at home. And the next time, I'm going to call your parents, the next time you daven at home, you're going to have to daven again in yeshiva, so those who even pay to daven at home. I had a maaseh this morning. I wasn't on my feet. I wasn't thinking on my feet, but I did correct it by mincha today. So I learned, Rabbi Shar, I sat next to Rabbi Shar from Zichrono Livracha for many years, and he, as you heard from the hesped I made, he was able to correct any tefillah mistake in his sleep. But I don't mean it as a guzma, in his sleep. So he could do it. So I learned from him, because I watched him so many times that when he wasn't there, I was like, I picked up on it. So anyway, I'm Dami with the ninth grade today, and Mendy was there, so he could vouch for the story, every word of it. And the kid's getting up this morning, and, you know, so I said, ten times as fast. So I said, I went over to him, I said, same bracha. So I quote it, the same bracha. So he said, the same bracha. You said the same Talmud, the same bracha. And then he looks at me and says, in my shul last night, they announced, last night, they would say, the same Talmud, ninth grade, have no, it's an old car, they have no basic das. And so they tell me in the middle of the thing, saying how, you know, in my shul. Now, then, right then, listen, you're not Yotze, you have to repeat davening. I know you have to repeat davening, but like right then, for a second, I started questioning. Like, you know, today's December 4th. You start saying it tonight. So part of me questioned, like, did I blow the day? I don't have time to look up what the date is. Maybe I lost a day somewhere. I don't know. Maybe I spaced out. Is that possible? But then what really got to me is, like, I believed him that in his shul, they announced, I'm going to be calling his rabbi, Amaretz Deraisa. I'm going to be calling his whole shul, his father, everyone. And I said, like, that's probably worse, because like, it's brought down that if you say the same Talmud Levracha when you're not supposed to say it, then it's a Simen Klala. So, you know, it's a Simen Klala. So like, what bigger Klala, this is my for, so what bigger Klala than calling his Rav in Amaretz? That was a bigger Klala. You know, I mean, the Rav at worst was guilty of a mistake, making a mistake, not Amaretz. A person can make a mistake. It is very confusing, December 4th. It's confusing. Because December 4th doesn't mean December 3rd going to December 4th and forth. The art scroll says that December 4th, which is the night before December 5th. That's how the art scroll writes it. So why do they write it like that? Because they know everyone makes mistakes on that. So, okay, I just walked away. So, I think that was worse for Klala, but the kid says that's announced in the shul. Now, the day went on, and the story's been going on in my head. Come on, this kid on a Sunday night. Come on, you think, was he in shul? Come on, I was thinking like, come on, I fell for that. He wasn't in shul last night. Huh? You know, I'm thinking like, and I thought of the story, this would help bring up tonight's, you know, thing, like, you know, like, oh, come on, that kid was not in shul. I can't believe I fell for that. After davening, I was talking over one of the rebbeim, and he said, like, he's having a conversation with you in the middle of Chazaras HaShatz. So someone said, yeah, a lot of kids talk during Chazaras HaShatz, not the Chazan. You know, but so that's the thing I learned. You cannot quite challenge a kid. It gets very hard. You know, a lot of menalim, they challenge kids. They want to find out what happened. You get a report. Someone's, you know, speaking whatever inappropriately in the dorm, and I don't know who, but it's in that room. Okay, they call a kid in. What did you say? You know, come on. I know you said something. What did you say? So that they use that tactic. Not. I agree with it. We don't do that. But that's why. But I don't do it, and I, you know, Rabbi Gito doesn't do it. I can't speak for everyone, but. We try not to do that.
So how do you do it instead?
Where's your phone?
Listen, you know, you're not Zoha. There's certain information was called inadmissible. So in court, this is how you look at it. Certain information is not admissible in court. Like there are rules of what they're allowed to bring up information. Okay, this guy guilty. He's guilty of armed robbery. Okay, so he's found guilty, not found guilty, he's on trial for armed robbery. So are you allowed to bring into account that he had 11 other armed robbery convictions in the last 3 years?
Yeah.
No. Okay, so I made that up. So sometimes, they fight beforehand and they, you know, judge rules beforehand. No, you're not allowed to bring up, the jury's not allowed to hear that he had 11 other armed robbery convictions in the last 3 months.
Actually, that just happened.
So, okay, so it's inadmissible, right? It's called inadmissible evidence. You can't bring that up. It's not, no, yeah. So you have to view it like whatever he's going to tell you is not admissible. You're not allowed to ask a kid to snitch on another kid. You can't do that. That's bad midas. You're teaching the kid bad midas. You can't do that. Now, if a kid is the toelis, feels that someone's doing something wrong and he feels that it's not right, yeah, he could say it over the toelis, you know, and I guess you could tell the kids, like, listen, somebody, you know, did something which was very damaging to someone else. If anyone has information, what happened the other day, a kid said that his watch was stolen or something was stolen. And I asked the kid, where was it stolen from? He showed me. And I said, do you have any suspects? So he gave me two suspects. So, okay, you know, kid has is suspicious of someone stole his watch. Is already like, you know, it doesn't mean anything, but good place to start is anywhere, right? So I mentioned Rabbi Gita, and Rabbi Gita sees one of the suspects walking down the hallway, and Rabbi Gita, you know, casually says, oh, so-and-so is missing his watch. So the kid says, I didn't take it.
Over.
So he says, I didn't say you took it.
Oh.
But
over.
Find out where it is. Get me help, you know. I want to find it. He says, oh, okay, fine. Now, I don't know Pshat, but less than 24 hours later, his watch was found mamish in public domain. The kid walked into a particular area of the yeshiva, and the watch was right there. Now, what was Pshat? Did the kid lose the watch there? I asked the kid, who had come over to me, he said, I heard you found your watch. He says, yeah, he was so happy. He says, is that where you left it? I don't think so. But, you know, it's like, you know, you have to use a more different chachma to challenge your kid. I mean, that's what would have happened in the old days. Like, you know, screw the kid to the wall and do that. I myself have been guilty in my youth. You know, definitely did it the way that I thought you're supposed to do it. But, you know, you can't do that.
What made the kid want to go back?
Well, let's assume for a second that the kid took the watch. We don't know that. It could be the first kid, you know, really left it there. But, I mean, on the tzad that is what happened?
Or
what do you think?
Because
that, yeah. So, the kid gave it back because, like, you know, no, he didn't really want to steal the watch. I was meeting today with a guy who was probably not religious, not in the yeshiva. He was, I don't know, he looked to be about 65, 70. And told me, I know why he told me, because he sees I'm a religious Jew. He says, you know, I still feel so bad. I feel such guilt about it. That when I was 11 years old, my temple, it was like reform, my temple was running a some kind of carnival. And there was a wiffle bat and ball. And you needed like 11 tickets to get it. I only had 9 tickets. And I really wanted that wiffle bat and ball, and I just handed in the 9 tickets there, and I took it anyway. I feel so bad. I stole it. He was telling me this. And I feel bad. So that you stole it? He says, well, that I stole it in the temple. It bothered me. Is my wife there? Esty, are you there?
Wow.
Do you remember that story with that with the temple? Isn't that amazing? It was amazing.
Yeah.
Like he's like it's.
By him telling the story, he thinks he is.
It was confession.
That
yeah, I'm wondering why I should tell him, because usually they say the Heshavas Agzela Shargozal, you know, you could make retribution, but then he give a donation. He probably he's a very wealthy guy, so he's probably gonna give them like a $50,000 donation to a Reformed temple. So, like, he's not gonna give them a dollar for the bat. So, should I tell him? So I just wonder what I should have to ask a Shaila of what to do. But like, No, but you see, like, people have guilt. That you don't ask why he returned it, because, like, he didn't really want to steal it. People don't want to steal.
Or Brigida has nothing to do with it?
Huh?
Brigida's intervention had nothing to do with anything?
No, I think it did. I think he just, so to speak, kept it on his mind. He's like, he's just like, you know, if you find it, let me know. That's like, I think, the way to do it. I'm trying to help so-and-so find this watch, see what you do to help me. And that would be the, you know, he found the, now he looks good, Rabbi Brigida, you know, he helped Rabbi Brigida crack the case wide open. What?
The way it happened, the kid just found it.
It could be that he thought that maybe Brigida knows more. You know, Brigida is the type to know more than he lets you know. He knows. So he probably felt that maybe Brigida is going to close in. Now the guy found his watch, probably dropped the case.
And he was just scared.
He could be a little scared. But but it wasn't. Huh? We did find out the window of when that might have been taken. But, you know, I the cameras also, I'll tell you, Maisa, we have a few minutes left. I was doing consulting for a school once, and one of the things I noticed was that I flew. I got a call from the Tormasura, and they said, you know, right, Palgon, we have a mentoring program where new principals are mentored by more experienced principals. It was like 10 years ago. So I said, Rabbi Pasek, did some of my parents call you to ask you to get me some mentoring? He says, oh, I'm so sorry. No, I wanted you to be the experienced mentor. I said, oh, sure, I'm so relieved. I thought you wanted to get me a mentor, which I don't mind, but like, how did you get my name to be one of the mentees, you know? So he said, I want you to go to a school to help a new principal. So, okay, so I, you know, I was a little nervous because I never did that before. So I went and I spent, I think, a day and a half there. And I came back and I got a lot of great ideas. But one of the things I told him was that, you know, you have old lockers in the hallways. They're rusty and old, and it makes the whole hallway look old and rusty and yucky. You know what rusty lockers look like? It's just like, it's like, ugh, school. So this principal took it to heart. He spoke to his board, it was a board of directors, you know, run school. He got his board of directors to buy a modular right outside their building as a locker room. They bought brand new lockers in their new modular, and the lockers were like $25,000. The modular was $150,000. Then they had to do electricity and lighting and zoning and wiring. It was like a $250,000 ordeal. I came back the next year. It was a 3-year thing. I came back the next year, and there's like this new modular. So I was speaking to some of the kids in the school. So I said, wow, you guys have an awesome school over here. I was like the visiting thing, so I was at Freedom. They were told that he's a principal of a school in Miami, so he's trying to, you know, speak to kids and compare. So if he comes over, you speak to him. So they were comfortable speaking to me. So I said, you have like an awesome school. They said, why is it so awesome? I said, look at that beautiful locker room you have. It's unbelievable. So he told me that. Principal is a letter. I said, why? He says, you see that locker room? I said, yeah, what's wrong with it? He said, look. So they take me there, and there was a camera, one of those cameras on top. He said, he's spying on us in the locker room. So I went to the principal. I said, you know, what's with the camera? So he said, you know, it's not part of the building, just security-wise, you have to have a camera there. So I said to him that there's this old adage of someone's walking down the street, and on the right side of the block, there's a toddler inside a fence crying, and on the left side of the street, there's a toddler inside the fence laughing. One of the parents told their kids that we're locking this gate so you can't get out and hurt yourself. And one of the parents told their toddler that we're locking the fence so no one can get in to hurt you. Which toddler was laughing and which toddler was crying?
Hurt you was crying.
Huh?
Someone tells me hurt you was crying.
Right. So anyone, usually everyone gets this. The parent who told the child, the toddler, that I'm locking this fence so you can't get out and hurt yourself is crying. And the parent who told the toddler that I'm locking this fence so no one can get in to hurt you is laughing. I told the principal, had you told the kids that, you know, you have this camera there because you're not able to help or protect them when they're outside the building, and it's a crazy world out there. Should anyone ever come, we have to be able to know right away to come aid you. They'd have been laughing and they'd have been singing, for he's a jolly good fellow. But what you told them, I pulled the rabbit for a minute on him, what you told them was that don't try anything in this locker room because I have a camera in my office. I said, so he, you know, he told me, how did you know I said that? I said, I know you said that because you just blew $250,000. You could have been, he's a jolly good fellow, but you must have told them that, because why would they be angry? So you must have told them that I put this camera here, so, you know, don't try anything. I have a camera in my office. I would never, ever, ever, ever tell a kid I saw something on a camera. Never. To me, it's so posh not to do that. Some people do. I mean, the wise people, in my opinion, the pekech doesn't. But I never tell a kid, don't tell me that I saw it on camera. The cameras are in the building to spy on me? That's what the cameras are for? I would never tell a kid I saw you on a camera. Never. Camera? What camera? Oh, cameras. That's for terrorists.
But why he feels like...
Huh?
Why would 42 for him, like, against the kid? They just feel like they're after me. She was after me.
Yeah, you're being spying on me. Who wants to be spied on? I'll be spied on. It's torture. Isn't that an unbelievable lesson? Yeah. That's such a good volleyball.
Like,
huh?
I'm never scared of you. You're not like telling them something else. No.
Well, you know.
You should be spied on.
You are hopelessly a tzaddik.
Not like in Queens, they have cameras everywhere. Like,
yeah, because Queens, you know.
And the friends will look at, like, if we had a class, they see it on their screen.
In Miami, the kids would not react that way. The Queens has a very special voice. In Miami, the boys would be very resentful. What do you say? We have some Miami guys here.
All the Miami guys know everyone sees the screens.
Huh?
No.
Everyone.
Before they do something.
Would guys be resentful? My time. Would guys be resentful if someone said to them, "I saw you on the camera," you know? Why you at a class? I saw you on the camera.
Yeah, because I know when people do something wrong, they're saying they're not using the cameras to spy on me. They're using the cameras for security, and then they do something stupid. I've seen it multiple times.
Is that what?
I've seen people do that. Like, oh, they look at the camera and they're saying, probably not watching me. They only use it for security purposes, and then they do whatever they want.
Okay, fine. You know, so you're proving my point.
Yeah.
In Ojave, they were very resentful of the cameras.
Someone told me something in the camera dancing in the hallway. In the dorm, just I was skipping down the hallway, and two people were in the office and told me they saw that.
Yoga. That's part of, you know. But okay, you know, that. But that's the point, you know. You have to use those systems carefully. Okay, we have to continue in the van because it's